It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll have a recap of results in the Wisconsin Senate and State Assembly, where Republicans secured their largest majorities in decades.
First, at 1:21 a.m. today, the Associated Press called it for Donald Trump as president-elect of the United States. Trump took a majority of the electoral votes. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by a small margin. The results were a shock to most pollsters who had predicted Clinton as the most likely winner. Also surprised some observers who saw breaks with high-ranking Republicans, rhetoric that alienated minorities, and a campaign that was rocked by scandals, including the release of the Access Hollywood tapes.
But Trump's election was also a triumph for supporters who wanted a break from the political establishment and found Hillary Clinton to be untrustworthy. Trump spoke to the country shortly before 2 a.m. Central Time this morning, and here's a clip from his speech after his victory was announced.
I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard. Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely.
We want to hear from you now and throughout the afternoon on various issues related to the election and what came out of it. What was your reaction to the results of the presidential election? Tell us whether or not you voted, if you're part of the majority of Wisconsin voters who backed President-elect Donald Trump. What do you make of yesterday's election results? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Want to know whether or not you're happy about the election result. If you voted for your first choice, what you're looking forward to or looking for going forward. Again, you can post on the Central Time Facebook page or call us at 800-642-1234.
And we're looking to get our guest on the line, and he is with us now. Paul Nolet, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, joins us now. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi, great to be here.
Well, Paul, what do you think it is that ultimately tipped the scales in Donald Trump's favor last night?
Well, you know, I think one big thing that stood out to me that was pretty unexpected was the relatively low turnout, actually, overall. I think a lot of people were expecting a higher turnout because, I mean, there was so much attention paid to this campaign. And yet we actually saw some of the lowest turnout since 2000. And I think the reason why that's relevant for Donald Trump is that, by and large, he was able to maintain kind of something similar to a typical Republican coalition, but there was quite a bit of drop-off in the Democratic coalition for Hillary Clinton, and that lower turnout, particularly on the Democratic side, I think really ended up hurting her.
And that seems like a surprise because we've been hearing about high numbers when it came to early voting. So what do you think accounts for the disparity there? Big early voting, not so much turnout.
Yeah, and that was what was really surprising. I mean, particularly key states like Florida and, Nevada, and there were a number of other states in which it seemed like early voting was particularly high, but we didn't see those same numbers on Election Day itself. And, that might just simply reflect that, the Hillary Clinton campaign, which had a very strong ground game, placed an emphasis on getting voters out early and succeeded in that, but those were voters that would have just voted on Election Day anyway. So kind of getting even more of a broader kind of coalition that Obama was able to do twice just wasn't there on Election Day itself.
In terms of what got missed, because this victory of Donald Trump's is seen as an upset. The word stunning has been used several times in various media outlets. So what did the pundits miss?
Well, I think I was one of them who was kind of stunned and shocked by the result as well. And, you know, I think what a lot of the pundits and other observers were looking at were the polls, which, you know, by and large have been fairly accurate in past election cycles. And what was kind of amazing is that if you look back all throughout this year, so, you know, going back to January and before Trump was even the Republican nominee, you saw, you know, Clinton with a fairly consistent edge on Trump, you know, 3 or 4 points. And sometimes it would be more than that, sometimes a bit lower. But it was a pretty consistent edge throughout the entire election season. And so I think from a lot of pundits' perspectives, seemed like that was what was going to play out on election day itself. And, of course, it didn't.
So what's the takeaway then, that the people who showed up at the polls were not the people that showed up to vote on election day were not the people who were polled?
Yeah, you know, and I think that there's a couple possible things that were going on, at least. One was that, you know, the way that the polls were constructed just missed a key part of the Trump coalition. And particularly, I think it may have missed more of kind of like white voters without a college degree who either weren't answering polls or weren't weighted properly in the polls. So that's one possibility. You know, and another possibility that is kind of intriguing, it's going to take some work to try to see if this was the case, but whether there were actually some people who ended up voting for Trump who right to the end in polls either said that they're undecided or that they weren't going to vote for either one of the two-party candidates, but then ended up voting for Trump on Election Day. And at least kind of looking at the numbers, my initial impression is that it seemed like it was possibly college-educated women, particularly college-educated white women that might fall into that category, that were particularly likely to say that they were undecided and then ended up voting for Trump in the end.
Paul Nolet is with us right now, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, and we're looking at the results of last night's upset election in a way. You had the Clinton name attached here, a name with a long history in politics in this country, and you had Donald Trump, the outsider candidate, built a name for himself in business, and his platform, Paul, included tenets from populism, nationalism. Is it safe to say that that kind of messaging is part of what won America over?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, in some ways, a lot of the discussion when it looked like Hillary Clinton was the favorite going into Election Day was, oh, well, you know, Hillary Clinton is not particularly popular. She has very high unfavorable ratings, but she has the fortune of going up against somebody with even higher disapproval ratings. But in some ways, I think now that we know the election results, it might make more sense to look at it from the flip side to say, well, you know, Donald Trump was running in a populist as a populist in a kind of an anti-establishment, anti-elite year, and he had the fortune of running up against, you know, who might be described as one of the most kind of establishment long-standing politicians in the public eye, you know, in America. So I think the contrast there between, you know, the populist Trump and the establishment Clinton really hurt Clinton in what was ultimately an anti-establishment year.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Eric joining us from Oxford. Eric, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. What do you want to share?
Oh, I was just curious. Where do you think the future of our country is going to go now, with still everybody being so divided?
Right, and so there's division among the electorate, Paul, but maybe not among the government anymore. We've got Republicans controlling both chambers of Congress as well as the White House. So, what do you think about Eric's question?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be a real struggle, I think, for Trump after this really extraordinarily, you know, negative, nasty campaign to try to unify the country and to try to get the many people who disapprove of him personally to come to his side. And so it's going to take a lot of work, I think, on Trump's part to try to unify the nation. And, you know, maybe one step forward was his victory speech last night, which was, I think, pretty gracious, but he's going to have to continue that for the beginning of his administration, and then through that. And I do think, you know, the fact that he is coming in with Republican majorities in both the House and Senate is certainly going to, you know, potentially help him get some things done, things that he had mentioned on his agenda. But at the same time that I say that, it also presents a danger because a lot of what he said he wanted to do was highly controversial. So, you know, if he insists, oh, the first thing I'm going to do is build a wall on the Mexican border or, you know, appoint a special prosecutor to prosecute Hillary Clinton, then that's just going to, I think, make the problem worse. And it's going to be very difficult to unify the country under those conditions.
We're recapping the presidential election right now and Donald Trump's historic victory with Paul Nolet, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you voted for Donald Trump, tell us what appealed to you about him and his message, and if you feel you were overlooked, maybe by media, by pollsters. If you voted for someone else, Hillary Clinton or a third-party candidate, tell us what the deciding factor was for you. Tell us if you were surprised by the results of the election. Call 800-642-1234. And how do you feel the day after? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And right now we're picking up our conversation with Paul Nolet, Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. And we're looking at what led to Donald Trump's surprise win and what it means for the country.
And we want to hear from you. Let us know who you voted for and why. Tell us your reactions to the results of the election. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. After this heated campaign season, are you concerned about divisions in the country, about what happens next, or are you feeling optimistic today? Call in 800-642-1234.
And Paul, I want to ask you something before we dive into our callers, and there's a lot of them, but, you know, we had Charlie Sykes in Wisconsin. In a sense, I think early on, Wisconsin was seen sort of as a firewall with the Never Trump movement, and at the end of the day, Trump carried Wisconsin. What do you think happened?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that was certainly one of the many things that was surprising, I think, about Election Day, because Wisconsin seemed particularly resistant to Trump because of, you know, because of Charlie Sykes and because of conservative talk radio. And, you know, Republicans in Wisconsin, if they want to win statewide, of course, they have to win, you know, those wow counties like Waukesha, Ozaukee County outside of Milwaukee, because not only are they heavily Republican, but there are a lot of people there, a lot of voters. So, you know, going into this, I think the prediction, and I will admit that this was my prediction as well, was that, you know, Trump was going to underperform in those counties, and by doing so, it was going to make it really difficult to win the state. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think what happened was, you know, Charlie Sykes, conservative talk radio that wasn't, you know, really totally on Trump's side for much of this campaign. You know, initially Republican voters said, well, you know, I don't know about Trump, but at the kind of in the last week, maybe even the last day, they decided, look, I'm going to stick with my party and go with this. And, you know, and especially the fact that even, you know, Ron Johnson didn't outperform Trump by all that much. He did a little bit, but not by all that much, indicates that, you know, most of the Republicans in the state ended up siding with their presidential nominee.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Steve joining us in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Steve, hi.
Hi. Say, this is regarding Electoral College. You guys had a good show on it yesterday. And it's kind of interesting. Just looked online. As of a few minutes ago, Clinton was leading the popular vote in the country by over 200,000, about 0.7%, whereas the Electoral College votes, Trump has 279 and Clinton has 228. And I just, you know, really think that the Electoral College at least needs to be looked at in the way that the votes from there are distributed out, because it really doesn't seem very proportional. You know, here we've got Clinton with actually a little bit of a lead in the popular vote, and the Electoral College votes aren't even close.
Steve, thanks a lot for that. And Steve, talking about something that's been brought up before, not just in this election, the Electoral College, and how it sometimes is not the same answer as you get with the popular vote. What do you think about that, Paul? Should we be looking at it?
Yeah, you know, of course, this is the second time in five presidential cycles here that the popular vote winner ends up losing the Electoral College and, by extension, the presidency. So I think that this is just going to be talked about even more. And particularly since, you know, at least I know votes are still coming in, but at least my understanding looking at where the votes still need to be counted that, you know, I think Steve mentioned it was about 0.7% right now, and that might actually even go to about 1% or perhaps even more than that, that Clinton ends up winning by. So you have a, you know, a very close popular vote, but then an electoral college that actually looks like something like a blowout. It just really reinforces that point that, you know, the popular vote at the end of the day are not the important votes. It's the votes of the electors. And I think particularly since throughout much of American history and certainly in the 20th, 21st century, there's been an emphasis on, you know, on democracy, on getting people to vote for, you know, initiatives across the country and referenda. I think the idea that there's this additional buffer between the popular vote and the electoral and the presidency is, for a lot of people, outdated. And so I think there will be a lot more pushes to try to do something about the Electoral College. But, you know, at the end of the day, it would require a constitutional amendment to change, and that seems highly unlikely in today's polarized environment.
Steve, thanks a lot for that call, and we go next to Sandy in Silver Bay, Minnesota. Sandy, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to share?
Well, I wanted to share that I'm happy that Trump got in. I think that the man really, truly loves America. I think he, through his business that he's had in the past, surrounds himself with really smart people. And I don't think he's going to let us down. I think he's going to be very transparent in what he does, where he can be transparent. And I think he'll be honest with the American people. And as for everyone getting along and uniting, I think the media needs to not sell us short, because I think it can be done. And I think if somebody can do it, it'll be Trump. He's a little rough around the edges when he talks, but at the same time, he's speaking from the heart. He's being honest with us.
And Sandy, by the way, we're going to talk about unity and how we can move on a little bit later in the show, so stick around for that. But I want to ask you, what do you think about the tone that Donald Trump struck in his victory speech? Do you think it's the right tone moving the country toward unity after this really divisive election?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that was absolutely brilliant. We need to do that. If we ever ended up in a war on our property, everybody in the United States would unite. It wouldn't. Look how we united after 9/11. We did. It was short, but we did. We need to keep that in mind and have respect for the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
Sandy, thank you for that. And Paul, before we get to you, I want to play a little bit of what Hillary Clinton had to say in her concession speech, looking at how to move forward.
We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought. But I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead.
And there's Hillary Clinton's, a bit of her concession speech. And Paul, what do you think about it? We've got Donald Trump striking a magnanimous tone, conciliatory tone, looking toward unity, and Clinton saying Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind. Is this going to be enough to urge people toward that unity?
Yeah, and, you know, I think this kind of call for unity has gotten off to a good start, at least, with these two speeches. But you know, I do want to caution that at the end of the day, they are just two speeches. There's going to be a lot of not only more speeches, but a lot of policy making and a lot of debates that are upcoming. And whether they're done in a respectful tone or whether they're done in a kind of, you know, bomb throwing tone is going to make a big difference in whether unity is actually possible here. So, you know, one of the things that I think has been one of the most remarkable things about America is that there's this tradition of peaceful transitions of power, which we take for granted, I think, largely here, but it's You know, it's not really all that common across the world. So seeing that is kind of an uplifting thing, I think, when you see both sides being gracious to one another. But again, you know, it's all going to be about the follow through. If you go back to 2008, I think, you know, with McCain and Obama, there was a certain graciousness after the election as well, but it didn't take too long before, you know, a lot of the partisan back and forth really started again. And, you know, to a degree, I think that that's going to be inevitable because, after all, there's some really important issues that people really disagree on in the United States. And so there's going to be some partisan back and forth. But, you know, I think Trump does have a chance to kind of turn away from his campaign mode and go to a governing mode where he, you know, tries to connect with the other side more so, and at least tries to pursue his policies in a respectful tone, even in the face of disagreement from the other side.
Well, thank you, Sandy, for that call. Appreciate you bringing that up. And Paul, thanks so much to you for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Paul Nolet, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. He joined us there to recap the results of last night's presidential election and discussed what led to President-elect Donald Trump's victory.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Republicans maintain their majorities in Congress. It paves the way for the GOP to reshape Washington. We'll have a recap of U.S. congressional races around the country with Harry Enten from 538.com.
First, national election results are getting a lot of the attention today, but there were also many seats up for grabs in the Wisconsin State Senate and Assembly yesterday. Half of Wisconsin State Senate seats were up for a vote, so there were 16 races on the ballot, and all 99 state Assembly seats were determined yesterday as well.
And we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are the top issues that you want to see the Wisconsin legislature address in the next session? Do you think that Republicans having strong control of the legislature will help move things along, get things done? And how well do you feel that your state senator or assembly member represents your needs and your interests? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Laurel White is WPR's state capitol reporter, was working late into the night last night covering these results and more. Laurel, good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, let's start with the big picture in each chamber one at a time. How much did the Wisconsin Senate change?
Well, not very much. Republicans picked up one seat in the state Senate.
And that was Democrats are hoping maybe a majority for Democrats is always a long shot, but they were hoping to actually make a couple gains here. So this was a surprise along the lines of a lot of other things that happened in the country from the Democrats' perspective, wasn't it?
That's right, Rob. It was really a disappointment for Democrats. They had two seats in particular that they were targeting that they had hopes that they might be able to flip from Republican control to their control. That was the 18th Senate District and the 14th Senate District. And they just weren't able to pull that off in either instance.
And a slight pickup in the Assembly also for Republicans.
That's right. Republicans picked up one seat in the Assembly as well.
And are you hearing things from Republicans? We'll talk about some policy things in a bit, but are Republican leaders chalking their gains up to Donald Trump, unexpected turnout in certain areas? Are they their message?
Well, they are pointing to Donald Trump. I just returned from a press conference with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And he said that it's undeniable that Donald Trump had an effect on down-ballot races, that he helped down-ballot races. The speaker said that he was expecting Donald Trump to do so, and it does look like he pulled that off for him.
Before we get into some specific races, let's take a look at that press conference you're at. This is new news even since Election Day. This is, as you mentioned, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Majority Leader Jim Steinke. Here's Robin Voss now talking about concealed carry laws and how they pertain to schools, one of their possible agenda items.
I think there are legitimate issues that folks have brought up, that if you have a legal concealed carry permit and you want to drop off your kids at school, under the current law, you're committing a crime. You know, so there should be people of goodwill who once again sit down and say, okay, what's a common sense answer to solve this problem so we don't have folks who are concerned about getting arrested for doing something as simple as dropping off their grandkids?
So that sounds like a relatively small tweak on concealed carry laws. Mm-hmm. Are they talking a lot of little things, or are they looking at bigger picture changes in 2017?
Well, that was just one little thing that they mentioned that was very specific. I think what we're going to see from Wisconsin Republicans is just a little bit more assertiveness, maybe a little bit more confidence in accomplishing the agenda that they have already laid out. So Senator Scott Fitzgerald, who is the majority leader in the Senate, has been in touch with media today. He said that we should really expect a lot of the same things that the Republican-controlled houses have been doing since they took control of the state capitol in 2010. So some of the specific things, in addition to what Speaker Voss mentioned there with concealed carry, could be, you know, limiting or repealing some prevailing wage laws, working on the minimum markup law, creating some incentives for private schools. So a lot of the things that we've seen Republicans working on in Wisconsin, just continuing those things and really taking this strong majority as kind of a mandate to continue what they've been doing here in Wisconsin.
We're talking to Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, looking at yesterday's election results in the races for Wisconsin State Assembly and State Senate. As we've heard, Republicans had slight pickups in both chambers. Democrats had been hoping to flip some seats there. They did not. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeff joins us from Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for this opportunity. I know that our mayor up here in Superior is planning to leave office in April, and one of the issues he brought up is how the state legislature is not going to be giving local governments aid, you know, through money, through revenues. So local governments are pretty much on their own to provide revenue streams to invest in their local communities. And I think the Republican argument throughout the state is promoting entrepreneurship and ingenuity on a local level, and I think that empowers people rather than being told, say, perhaps by Democratic Party leaders, that believe everything is going to be okay when it isn't. You have to now dig deeper in order to get local services to be paid for, because the money's not there with tax cuts and other revenue sharing. So it's going to be a creative future, but I think the Republicans won that argument.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Laurel, was there talk about funding for local governments at all from at this press conference you were at?
There really wasn't, Rob. They talked some about the state transportation debate, which has been, of course, very contentious with the governor, the state Senate, and the state assembly not being able to find common ground on that. The governor has said that he doesn't want any new taxes to pay for road spending. There's a projected transportation budget shortfall of almost $1 billion in the next budget. So that was really where the conversation focused in terms of providing money to local governments. Of course, they're involved in transportation funding. And what Speaker Voss said about that today was, you know, Donald Trump seemed to run on a platform of bringing people together and discussing these issues, being pragmatic, kind of bringing that business perspective. And so he takes that as a sign that that's what people are interested in doing. And he thinks that that can happen in Wisconsin with that transportation budget.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Terry on the line in Colfax. Terry, hi.
Hi.
What would you want to bring up, Terry?
As an independent, I've seen Governor Walker's progress so far. I don't expect any cooperation across the aisles in Madison. Things like minimum wage I could go on. Funding the UW system. It doesn't seem like, and I won't even talk about the K-12 system.
Right. Terry, I got your point. First of all, he's not expecting to see a lot of cooperation across the aisle. Laurel, given the majorities they have, Republicans don't really have any need to work across the aisle for the most part, do they?
That's right. I mean, they really can get a lot of things done unilaterally. I think Speaker Voss made a point today of saying that He hopes to work with Democrats across the aisle. He hopes that they build a coalition, that they can agree on certain issues. And to mention something that Terry brought up there, Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald in the Senate has actually mentioned that increasing some spending for K-12 education and the University of Wisconsin system is among his priorities. And Governor Scott Walker has also discussed that a bit, talking about possibly providing funding for the UW system that's based on kind of measures of success. We're not totally sure what that means yet, what sort of benchmarks they might have to meet to earn that funding. But that's definitely something that Wisconsin Republicans have been discussing that we might see come up in the next legislative session.
We'll talk a little more about some of the most competitive seats, Laurel. But, I mean, there were 99 plus 16, so 115 state legislative elections, most of them from election to election. If there's more than one candidate, often it's a lock for a Democrat or a Republican because of the way lines are drawn. And in many districts, there's no competition. There is exactly one candidate on the ballot. So the vast majority of the seats yesterday were really never in question, were they?
That's right. Yeah, I think that there was something like 50 uncontested races.
Uncontested.
That's right. So the incumbent was just kind of hanging out, didn't have a challenge there to worry about. But what we did see, whether the race was contested or not, whether they had an opponent or not, it was a very good night for incumbents last night. And of course, the majority of incumbents were Republicans. So Republicans had a very strong night.
We're talking about the results of the state Senate and Assembly races yesterday and policies moving forward with Laurel White, WPR's state capitol reporter.
And we'd like to hear from you. Did anything about the races for Wisconsin's Assembly and Senate seats surprise you? If you lived in a district that was being decided yesterday, what was the tone of that race? If you volunteered on a state campaign, tell us what it was about the candidate that inspired you to get involved. And with the Republicans holding a stronger majority, what are the top issues for you? What do you want to see them get to and address in the next session? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're taking a look now at how the races for Wisconsin State Senate and Assembly turned out and what priorities the Republican majority is putting forward now that the election is a day behind us. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is with us to recap the results.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on Wisconsin State Legislature, a slightly bigger Republican majority in both chambers. Good news, bad news, what are you hoping for, fearing in the next session of the legislature? Call 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Laurel, wanted to key in a couple of these races. The kind of surprise flip was Julie Lassa, Democratic incumbent, 24th state Senate race or seat. Talk about that race in central Wisconsin a little.
That's right. That was really a surprise to most folks that have been predicting and watching Wisconsin's election heading up to last night. Nobody really thought that this race was going to be in play. What ended up happening was the incumbent, Julie Lassa, who is a Democrat, lost to her Republican challenger. She lost 48% to 52%, so not a huge margin, but certainly enough to be a definitive loss for Lassa. And there are a lot of things that, you know, people are looking at today as they try to pinpoint why Republicans had such a strong night and why we might have had an upset like in that race. And there are a whole list of things I could go into, Rob, that run from turnout of Democratic voters to redistricting to voter ID to voter enthusiasm. But I think, you know, that was one race where we really saw a surprise happen. Of course, the entire night was a big surprise to a lot of people.
Let's go back to our callers. We've got Dwayne on the line now in Wausau. Dwayne, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Dwayne?
I'm hoping that with the Republican, with a stronger Republican, and I don't know, but I would like to see them put more monies back into the municipalities, because living in Wausau, we just had a referendum to turn down a $25 wheel tax to cover our roads, which is about $650,000. But I don't understand why we can't get more of our money back. That's one of the things I hope that they would pursue.
Dwayne, thanks for that call. And I've heard, Laurel, from people with municipality organizations saying exactly what Dwayne is saying. They're having a hard time paying for their local roads. Forget the highways that have been a big part of the conversation in transportation. Any talk of that in this race in the Republican agenda?
That's absolutely right. I think, you know, a lot of municipalities have really been pushing for that road funding to go through. And that is, again, probably the biggest debate that we're going to have when legislators return to the Capitol starting in January and start talking through this next biennial budget. There is certainly pressure for that to happen. I think it just, it sort of depends on where common ground can be reached between the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly. Having new taxes like a wheel tax, gas tax, things like that are things that the governor has said that he won't support unless there are equivalent cuts elsewhere. So, you know, the Assembly Speaker today in that press conference said that he is open to discussing a variety of options. He's not, everything should be on the table, he says. So I think as we head into this next budget debate, we should consider that it's going to be a wide-ranging discussion, but certainly the governor has drawn a line in the sand. So it'll be interesting to see if he's willing to negotiate on that at all.
In the course of the presidential campaign, Donald Trump had called for big boosts in infrastructure investment. That's something I've seen Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader in the House, said, yeah, maybe this is something we can work with Donald Trump on. Are you hearing Republican leaders in Wisconsin referencing their presidential candidate on infrastructure?
Absolutely. Speaker Voss mentioned that today. He said that that's an area where he and Trump 100% agree that infrastructure should be a primary priority in spending, making sure that roads and bridges around, you know, in the speaker's case, Wisconsin, or in President-elect Trump's case, the country, are the best that they can be. And of course, they make the argument that that's beneficial not only to just everyday folks that use the roads, but to businesses that are already functioning or businesses that might be interested in moving into the state.
Let's bring on another caller now. Joan is with us in Eau Claire. Joan, hi.
Hi. I'm not at all surprised as to how our legislature turned out with these elections. We haven't had a fair and competitive election in Wisconsin since the gerrymandering went into effect in 2011. And I realize other states are dealing with this as well. But not only is Wisconsin one of the most egregiously gerrymandered states in the country, but in the history of our country, unfortunately. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks for the call. This is an issue that's been in the courts. Laurel, now that the election's on, I'll have to go back and see where that is. But people have pointed out Republicans used the state law as it stood to draw the lines the way they did. Democrats had controlled both houses of the legislature and the governor's office and didn't change those laws, maybe hoping that they would be the ones drawing the map. That's the rule we have right now, and that's how it's worked out so far.
That's right, and redistricting is certainly an element that people are bringing up when they discuss the election results of last night. And as the caller mentioned, you know, those new maps went into place in 2011. And as you mentioned, there's a federal court case ongoing right now that's challenging the legality, the constitutionality of those maps. So we're waiting to hear back from the court on what they're going to do about that. Those arguments, I believe, were in June, late May or June. And many people believe that the court was waiting until after the election yesterday to issue their ruling because they didn't want to affect the election in any way. So I would expect that we'll be hearing the federal court's ruling on Wisconsin's new maps within the next few months.
Joan, thanks for that call. We're talking to Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter. Before we take another caller, Laurel, I want to look at the race. Luther Olson, Republican Senate, Ripon area. He was another targeted candidate by Democrats. He is someone who is seen on some issues anyway as a more moderate Republican senator than his peers. He held on pretty handily, didn't he?
He did. Senator Olson ended up coming out with 57% of the vote. His challenger was Waupaca Mayor Brian Smith, and Smith had 43% of the vote. this was a really interesting race. As you mentioned, this was one of the two that Democrats thought that they might be able to flip in the Senate. And an awful lot of money was spent in this race. Senator Olson was targeted for votes, including his support of the public financing of the Milwaukee Bucks arena. He was hit for not visiting the state veterans home at King, which some people might be aware. There's been some controversy lately, some allegations that conditions at that veterans home aren't as they should be. And so this was a very high-profile race. Senator Olson was also involved in some of the John Doe documents that came out, that Guardian story that sort of implicated him allegedly in voting for a lead paint bill, that there had been a donor to Republican campaigns and that the bill would benefit them to sort of protect them from lawsuits. So there were all sorts of allegations and issues flying in this race to unseat Senator Luther Olson. And we really found out last night that none of those issues seem to stick with Wisconsin voters, and he is safely holding his seat.
Let's bring on another caller now. Janice is with us from just outside of La Crosse. Janice, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much. I am elated. I'm excited. I'm so high from this miraculous Trump win right now. I love it. And I love my state of Wisconsin, and I'm like, great. I'm glad Ron Johnson got back in. Let's get something done. Bring business back in here. Get competition going again. Get our infrastructure, our roads, our streets, our highways. Get this stuff moving. Get, you know, become competitive again. Trump's a businessman. Bring in the jobs. Let's go. Get this thing moving again. Thank God. Get rid of Obamacare. That joke, you know. Come on.
Janice, we're focusing on the state part of this. We hear you, though. And Janice, another person excited about the opportunity to boost infrastructure, as she obviously a big supporter of the Republican sweep in this election. But again, this is something that maybe could be a bipartisan effort on infrastructure related issues, Laurel.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that we could definitely see that. And it's interesting that Janice, and I love Janice's energy. I think a lot of the reporters that have been covering this race, we've had some late nights. And so it's exciting to hear somebody's excitement about last night. It helps infuse some energy back in. But she mentioned Obamacare. And actually, interestingly, Speaker Voss mentioned Obamacare today in his press conference with reporters in the Capitol. And said that he is looking forward to seeing what the federal government decides to do in terms of Obamacare and things like Medicaid expansion. Of course, Wisconsin rejected those federal Medicaid dollars, which has been a very partisan issue. Democrats being very displeased that those dollars were rejected, Republicans thinking that that was the responsible thing to do. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of the proposed reforms or the repeal of Obamacare that President-elect Trump has talked about might have an effect on Wisconsin going forward.
A lot to cover in the coming months and years, I guess. Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Laurel White. She's WPR's state capitol reporter. She joined us to recap the state Senate and Assembly races decided last night. You can check out all the results in those and other Wisconsin races over at wisconsinvote.org. Get the up to the minutes. Most of the results are in now. There may be a little counting left in some districts. The numbers, how they came out, what the map looks like. Again, that's wisconsinvote.org. And stick around here on the Ideas Network. More election coverage coming out throughout this afternoon. A lot to talk about still on national and state politics coming up here on Central Time.
Stepping away from the political news for a moment, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had a fun article this week, suggestions for the best trails for a good hike in Wisconsin before the cold weather and the snow inevitably set in.
It might be a good break for people on all sides of the political spectrum. Stop refreshing all the news feeds you've been looking at. Get outside and enjoy the fresh air. A long list of cool trails. Could be some nice hiking weather this coming weekend. Some I've been on. One I want to go to on this list, Doughboys Trail at Copper Falls State Park. I'm sad to say I still have not.
You still
I love
haven't
waterfalls.
Been there? Yeah.
And that's like Wisconsin's best waterfall,
it's
right?
It's spectacular, right? The falls themselves are the color of copper, as though, you know, everyone in the state had thrown their pennies in it. And they're kind of majestic, you know, for Wisconsin.
I've
you don't think
pictures.
Of us as having giant water, but we do. But yeah, you definitely have to go there.
And then one I have been to, Wyalusing State Park's Sentinel Ridge Trail. That is a lovely trail, and you hike along and overlook the convergence of the rivers there. That you've been to most of these, though.
I've been
talking.
To most of these. One that I have not been to is the East Bank Trail of the Milwaukee River, you know, in Milwaukee. And I'm really excited to check that out. I hear there's some cool things going on with restoration in the Milwaukee River, so that would be a great one.
I'm happy to say I got back to Parfrees Glen this last summer, so that was nice. It had been years since I'd been there, too long. Well, we've got the whole list of great trails to hike on before it gets cold in Wisconsin. Find it now over at the Central Time Facebook page.